You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions
Weekly Trek,
Episode 24.
Trek episode 24. Welcome to Weekly Trek, your roundup of everything Star Trek that happened this week. Transportation of major updates, replication of new merch, Section 31 caliber fan speculation. Whether you're off enjoying a secret vacation that nobody except you and the spouse knew on Risa, or you are taking a break from everything and going back to the Vulcan planet, whatever you missed on Trek news this week, Weekly Trek is here to catch you up. On this week's episode, we discuss Star Trek lore Malibu home for sale. Two new IDW books/series coming out very soon. More details about the Picard series show. And of course, for the biggest chunk of the episode, all the Discovery Season 2 stuff that dropped at New York Comic Con, including the poster that dropped just a little bit before the convention, the trailer, and our first look at Spock. Joining me today to discuss all the madness in what is definitely going to be a giant-sized Weekly Trek is our very own Jamie McGregor. Jamie, how are you, man?
G'day, Shashank. I am fantastic and great to be with you to talk about all this exciting Star Trek content. Is this the greatest time to be a Star Trek fan right at the second in time? I think it is.
I actually think the greatest time to be a Star Trek fan is the morning you wake up after having 2 hours of sleep at STLV on day two or three, and then you're just laying down with your face in your hands and going, this is a good time to be a Star Trek fan.
That is true. It's also the worst time to be a Star Trek fan.
That is also true. Well, let's get into the news. We'll start with a Coastal Living article that has been going around. It's the home whose exterior was featured in the TNG episode, The Survivors, and looks like it's on sale for just a really, really small, very reasonable price of $5.7 million. Jamie, what did you think about it? Did you get a chance to look at this? Do you have that kind of cash to jump in and buy that house?
Well, Shashank, what a shame. I'm in the middle of renovating an apartment that I've bought here in Sydney. Otherwise, this, of course, would be on my list of potential places to snapple up. Featured in the TNG episode, The Survivors, I think the realtors here, the people selling this house, have latched onto whatever possible claim to fame they could find in order to justify the price for the property. And look, if you're going to wake up from your Star Trek hangover, it seems like there are worse places in the world to do it from. Would you agree? Like, seems like quite a nice home. And if you want to live in a place that you are proud to say was once featured in a TNG episode, well, good luck at the auction. I don't know. Do you have any idea how they sell properties in Malibu?
I would imagine this would be more of a discreet sale, since it looks like they have a buyer's price already. So it would be somebody coming up after reading this article and going, hey, I think I have $5.7 million, or hey, let's sit down and negotiate. It feels like they already have an agent and everything ready to go. The interior of the house is beautiful. The view is great. It has a really nice view overlooking the ocean, and just all around, it's worth the $5.7 million. I think the added bonus of the fact that it was in a TNG episode makes it that much more interesting, I want to say, but I don't know if this excites me as much as hopefully one day going to be living on the planet on which Kirk fought Gorn. But I know that's only half a century away, because eventually we'll all move to Mars.
Well, every now and again, you do see these articles on the internet. It's kind of like, you know, there's that guy that turned his home theater into the bridge of the Enterprise D, kind of, sort of. That article, every couple of years he tries to resell his house, and that gets a run on the online blogs and whatever. I think we're all waiting for the day that whatever that water reclamation plant is that features in every features as you know, Starfleet Academy or Starfleet headquarters in basically every show. Whenever that thing goes on the market, that's when you get a bunch of Star Trek fans getting out there wanting to buy that. So until that water treatment plant or whatever it is, the sewage treatment plant, when until that goes up for sale, I think most Trek fans will just sit on their hands as far as this property goes.
Well, let me ask you, in all seriousness, if there was a Star Trek location you could really hypothetically live in, is there one that you'd like to live in? Mm. Or do they all seem way too crazy for you to want to be there?
My first immediate reaction, having been asked this, is I just want to be able to eat at Ben Sisko's father's place. That's what I would like to do. I'd like to go to New Orleans and eat there. That's I don't think there's any place I'd want to live or buy that I'm thinking of. What else would there be on Earth? Harry Kim's imaginary apartment in every fantasy that some alien put into his head. Maybe that might be a nice apartment to live in.
Other than that,
I'm not sure what else I could actually buy.
This is going to sound like a cop out answer, but I would like to live on the holodeck because that way I could with the frequency at which my mind changes. One day I could be in New Orleans. One day I could be on Ferenginar. One day I could be on Risa.
Shashank, that's a check. That is a check.
I Kobayashi Maru'd this thing, man.
Yes, you did. You totally Kobayashi Maru'd it. Yeah, fair enough.
Speaking of captains doing impossible things and trying to get out of situations, IDW announced two really great, amazing, insane, incredible, wonderful, oh my God, take all my money projects at NYCC. And the first one is Star Trek IDW 2020. We're reporting this from comicbook.com, but IDW was pretty vocal about it on social media also. Did you get a chance to look at this, Jamie? What did you think about it?
Well, of course, ever since our last weekly trek where you tried to convert me to the joys of Star Trek comicdom, I've kept my Andorian antenna have been slightly more attuned to comic book stories. So, yes, I did read about this. I believe there are two separate announcements, the first being an announcement of a book that's going to be part of a wider series that IDW are doing to celebrate their 20th anniversary. Is that right? And they're doing it not just
that
across Star Trek, but other properties that they provide comics for as well.
Mm-hmm. One new trend that's been picking up in comics recently, it started with this series called Old Man Logan at Marvel, where they turn all the characters old. Like they just take them into their old age and they show what they'd be like. So really it started back in the 80s with the Dark Knight Returns, then it was completely forgotten until they did Old Man Logan, and now it looks like IDW is doing it with every popular property of theirs, including Turtles and believe it or not My Little Pony and Joe and the Holograms. But the cool thing is they're doing one shot.
What is the life expectancy of a pony? I'm not sure that you could go 20 years forward or backwards for that and still have an appropriate comic. Anyway,
Jamie, these are magical ponies that
have tapped
into something greater than anything on the planet. Keep up, man.
All right, sorry. So now the conceit of this series is that they're either moving a property 20 years forward or 20 years back. Is that right? And in this case, they're taking Jean-Luc Picard 20 years back to his Stargazer days. And that sounds like a little niche in the Star Trek mythology that we haven't quite yet mined yet. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. It's written by Peter David, who wrote a lot of Star Trek stuff back in the day. He's one of his really good comics was The Trial of James T. Kirk. Then he also wrote just paperback novels. So he's a very well-known Star Trek writer, and it's drawn by Mirror Broken's mad genius J.K. Woodward. So he's coming back to do this one shot, which is pretty great. But just a little bit from the synopsis, 20 years before he took command of the USS Enterprise D, Jean-Luc Picard sat in the captain's chair of the USS Stargazer. And in this early mission, we get to see a vulnerable side of him, as well as glimpses of the brilliant tactician he would become. Perhaps the most telling thing is the cover that they released to this issue, which is Picard sitting in the center on what looks like the bridge with Beverly and her husband in the background, or who would soon become her husband. And it's just all kinds of interesting things that might come up in this one shot. Now, mind you, my one shots are usually not that big in size. So realistically, this would probably be a 25, maybe 30 pages long. So I don't know how much they'd be giving away and what we'd be getting, but I'm excited for what we'd be getting. What do you think?
Is that because I'm not a massive comic person, is that unusual? Like, what are the sizes that you would usually expect for some of these other releases?
Every comic book is typically 25 pages, but like our second big project that was announced, the Q Conflict, which is going to be a 6-issue miniseries, meaning it's 25 pages, but you get 6 books. So that's 25 into 6, while this one is just a one shot, meaning it'll start on the first page and the story will end on the 25th page. So you really don't get as much story. So in that way, it is a little unusual, but I'm frankly a little surprised that they didn't turn it into a big series, but I'm just going to be happy that we're getting this.
Well, I remember after our last weekly trek, we actually chatted a little bit about comics generally. And while I wasn't a big comic reader back in the day, I did read a comic that is not very popular, I believe, in the US, but it was pretty much around the rest of the world, in particular the Commonwealth countries, which was The Phantom, written by Lee Falk. The other comic book Lee, I think you could describe him as, and who also created Mandrake the Magician, and anyway, massively popular in Australia. And so I got a bunch of those comics, and I believe you had read some of that in India as well.
That is correct. Phantom. When you mentioned Phantom, I teared up. I'm not going to lie, because Phantom is one of the first comics I ever read. I used to cut it out of my newspaper because we didn't really have those comics being sold. They came in as newspaper strips. So I used to cut them out and paste them up in my little notebook so I could go back and read them over and over. But yeah, the Phantom is just a really great comic. And the cool thing about comics today is IDW included, they seem, to me at least, to still have the spirit that those old comics had. They have not lost it, which I can't say for a lot of other media. So yeah, that's Phantom is amazing, and I'm proud to say that comics today have kept that kind of spirit alive, and this IDW one shot is no exception.
Well, what I still have a box full of them, and yes, they're all kind of like 20-page comics. So that's what I would have thought. That's what I would have expected. That's what's in my mind's eye. And I'm still waiting to get my copy of the Star Trek versus Transformers. That's on my list to get. And then obviously I will move on to this. When is the Picard story going to be released?
So I believe these are all starting to print out in January 2019. So I think one comes out every month. So it's probably going to be a roulette, and we might know closer to when the actual date of that January 2019 comes out. When the actual month will be, we'll get this in. But I'm imagining it to be sometime in the summer, given that it's one of their more popular series. So maybe June, July is what I'm thinking it is going to be. But it's anyone's guess at this point.
And do you want to talk us through the second release, which is a kind of smash up, the six episode or six volume release, which is going to be called the Q Conflict and involve all four TOS, the TOS crew plus the three TNG, DS9 and Voyager crews. I don't know why Enterprise missed out, but hey. So they're all going to be part of a massive crossover. Is that right?
Oh, I'm going to try to talk you through it, but I'll just probably run out of breath because this is incredible. I'm reporting this directly from IDW Publishing's website. It was announced at New York Comic Con. For the first time ever, the beloved crews of four Star Trek incarnations, like you mentioned, TOS, TNG, DS9, Voyager, will be pitted against one another in IDW's comic book miniseries, Star Trek, The Q Conflict. And this will debut in January, and this will go for 6 issues. So we'll be getting 1 issue a month, I would assume. And it's written by the Tiptons, the same people who wrote, who adapted City on the Edge of Forever, who wrote Mirror Broken, Through the Mirror, and now are writing Terra Incognita. And the art is by David Messina, who's well known for doing Star Trek Countdown, which is Mike Johnson's first foray into comics with Star Trek. And he also did some Cloak and Dagger titles, but I'm not overstating it, or at least I don't think I am, but this is the biggest, most ambitious thing IDW Publishing has done with their Star Trek property. And I'm actually glad that they're finally doing this. This is like the Avengers in the IDW Star Trek world. Or if you're familiar, it's like the Infinity War or the Infinity Gauntlet in the comic book world of IDW, because it's really bringing everyone together to make one massive crazy story happen. And I just can't wait for it.
Yeah, sounds awesome. The little bit you mentioned there, though, pitting against each other. So do we get the sense that Q is, you know, in his inimitable style, playing a bit of mischief making with the four crews? Is that the kind of sense of what the plot's going to be?
Oh, if I was taking bets, I would bet on something along the lines of Q jumping into TNG's ship again and going, "Hey, Picard, guess what? Either one of you wins over the other three of these crews from all over the universe, or I'm going to kill all four of you. You decide." And then he just disappears. And it's going to be a crazy musical chairs where people's lives are being played with.
Or he could turn them all into a mariachi band, and that would be a fate worse than death. So Q could basically do anything, really. And isn't that the great thing about comics? The fact that you're not restricted by a budget, or anything you can draw can go into the story, right? So Q has full range of what mischief he can make with these four crews. So look, what a great way to put something into Star Trek fandom that could never happen on the screen or in another format.
One cool thing is the promo image that was released with this one is made by J.K. Woodward, and it shows the four crews with Q in the background smiling from the pilot episode. That's what he looks like in the courtroom. But it also will have regular covers by David Messina, which are connecting. A new comic book trend is to connect covers. Like if you place one next to the other, you should actually be able to make a bigger landscape portrait.
Right.
So that's even just the things that they're adding. They recently did that with Trek Formers also, but just everything about this is pretty incredible, man.
Yeah, so that's Q in his kind of judge outfit, right? From right. Encounter at Farpoint and All Good Things. Mm-hmm. Maybe the reason Enterprise isn't there is that he's going to put Enterprise on trial and have the four other crews work that one out. I reckon that'd be an interesting trial.
I don't know how the Voyager would come into play then, though, right?
Well, they probably haven't seen Enterprise because they're in the Delta Quadrant.
I really, that's also one of the reasons why I think it is going to be more of a Q saying, "You guys go run and fight for your lives," kind of thing. And one thing that the Tiptons do, the writers, is that they really, really take underutilized characters, like in Mirror Broken and Through the Mirror, and especially Terra Incognita, which is going on now. They're about characters who maybe had been in one episode or two episodes or... And the fact that they do that leads me to believe that this will be a really good series also for some of those characters that we always thought were underutilized. So everything points to good signs, and I'm going to try to not pass out from excitement until January so I can live long enough to read this.
There'll be a lot of Star Trek fans out there very excited by the details also released at the New York Comic Con around the new Picard series. We had a panel with Alex Kurtzman and Heather Caden, who are the executive producers, and there were limited bits of information provided. But of course, we will take whatever morsels we can gather up from the scraps at the bottom of the table. I don't know that there was too much shocking announced, other than one thing that I heard, Shashank, that was very exciting for me, was the notion that I think Heather Caden said that this series is intended to be a multiple season series, whereas I think a lot of people, when they were looking at CBS creating new formats of the show, a series in Discovery, these short treks, now the Picard series, I have a feeling there were some people that thought, oh, maybe this will be kind of like a mini series or a one and done. And so to hear that that's not actually what they're intending, and they're intending for multiple seasons, that's pretty exciting. Are you going to pass out from excitement at that news?
It's just going to be passing out from excitement at all the news I get. So many good things are happening. A couple of things that concern me about this whole thing is it looks like they're trying to give us Trek all year round, is something that I got off from this article on CBS All Access. So I'm only concerned that with this show and Discovery, and I know there are a couple of other shows that are being talked about in secret, it looks like at some point we might either get a Section 31 show or there. I just know from the news I've been reading is that there'll be more Trek shows coming our way. So I'm a little concerned that at some point, if you're going to keep just making ongoing series, it'll go back to that bubble that we almost had in the 90s and 2000s, early 2000s, where it just seemed like there was going to be too much Trek, and it was Trek trying to compete against Trek. So,
and what happens then is that the quality declines, right? Because you, for whatever reason, you run out of particularly original ideas, or you keep recycling the same things because the pressure of television results in that. So I think that's a fair concern.
And it's also a little, it gets competitive. You can't help it, especially with fandom today, with people being, there is a significant amount of the audience who are against Discovery. Like, they will not watch Discovery, or even if they watch it, all they do is criticize it. And once this show comes out and it's ongoing, they'll go, oh, we are only watching this show, and then you don't need to watch that show. That's not real Star Trek. This is real Star Trek. It just gets into a versus thing. And you should also realize that I don't think at this point, as we record this, there has never been a Star Trek mini series. Everything has always been ongoing. So that would have been a cool format to try. So at least for that, I would have liked it. But it's just that's a concern. Another one is,
I'm not sure, by the way, Shashank, I don't think that's a concern that CBS has. There, if there are two, if there's a split in the Star Trek fandom, and one lot will only watch one show, and one lot will only watch the other show, and every single one of them is subscribed to CBS All Access, they will take that quite, they'll take that in a heartbeat. I think the problem is for those of us that are concerned for the overall quality of Trek, and then yes, it is a bit of a concern.
And we still don't know what's going to happen with Star Trek 4. So there is that out there in the air. But
yeah.
Another concern is Sir Patrick Stewart is 78 years old. I and he's clearly in great health and he doesn't look it at all. But I don't know how, just even from this CBS All Access needing all our money perspective, I don't know how sensible it is to plan an ongoing series with someone who's 78 years old. I don't know if I've ever seen that. Maybe that's why I'm expressing this emotion. But all that said, it looks like they'll probably be starting to do the shooting and get into production in April. So sometime early 2020 is when we might see this. So just a lot of good news, just a couple of concerns, but just all around good start.
Totally. And he's got great genes. Let's just assume that, shall we? I think Patrick Stewart will be, he'll be making television and making art and acting for years to come, we hope, and hopefully he will do so on this new series. So what else was released at New York Comic Con? Was there anything else Trek-related that might have been dropped there?
Oh, I like how subtly you transition into it, but they could have called New York Comic Con the Discovery Comic Con, but because it looks like a lot of Discovery stuff dropped. Just before the convention, I'm sure everybody's already seen it, the new season 2 poster dropped, and everybody was speculating about what that thing in the center is around the Delta. That might be a bird. It might be, it looks like a goddess. We don't know what it is. Is that a Romulus bird of prey? Just all kinds of speculation. Well, that was put to rest when, amongst other things, the biggest reveal of all of this, if you ask me, was the season 2 New York Comic Con trailer premiering, which gave us a lot of info about what the plot might be, potentially where they're heading. It gave us some first looks, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's just start with the poster. What did you think of the poster? Did you think it was cool? I thought it was pretty cool.
It's cool. And yes, you look at that thing and go, what is that? But I'd also remembered from the first kind of teaser trailer where they talked about these mysterious kind of signs, these red, you know, whatever they are, appearing. So I kind of worked out exactly what they were going for. But it was the trailer itself that then provided more clues and the answer to what is that thing in the middle. It You think, was it a bird or was it a goddess? No, it's the combination of bird and goddess. It is a red angel of some description, so according to the trailer. So what did you think of the trailer?
The trailer was pretty incredible and on par with what we've been getting so far. Discovery's trailers have been particularly good. I've enjoyed them so far every time, whether they do one for their short tracks or whether they do a big trailer like this one. It's probably going to be the final trailer because I don't see a whole lot of things happening until January, which is when Discovery Season 2 starts by itself. I'm sure they'll drop a final trailer. Not that I want to see it. I want to go in because I feel like too much plot has been given away for me already. But interesting thing about the poster is it looks like there are those seven dots on the poster that go across the delta and the red angel in the center. So there is that connection there to the trailer. We got to see what Captain Pike does on the ship. And it looks like he's to no one's surprise, Anson Mount is just a badass, inspiring character. I like some of his dry humor that we got. I love that we also got to see Number One for a little bit, which was pretty great. But my favorite, or I guess my most intriguing reveal in the trailer was at the tail end. We get to see what Spock looks like.
Yes. So, and cue inevitable outrage from subset of fans, surely. Yes, Shashank, I would have assumed that that would follow. I don't know exactly why they'll be outraged, but they'll be outraged, so we can move past that. Now, it's obviously not Mirror Spock because that would just be the goatee, right? This one has a fuller beard, so we're obviously Prime Universe, or we're in the you know, the non-Mirror Universe. And I'm quite at peace with Millennial Spock. Are you happy with that? I think I can imagine him, you know, just down at the local, you know, ethically produced store with his latte and, you know, kale sandwich. And I'm delighted for hipster Spock.
Yeah,
so bring it on, I say.
I'm also excited to run into Millennial Spock at the local Starbucks where he's drinking his almond milk hot chocolate while typing his screenplay.
Exactly.
That's the Spock I want to see.
Yes. But, so look.
Go ahead.
We've got a lot to look forward to with Spock. I'm not sure that it was the thing that I took away from the trailer the most, though. To be honest, everyone seems to be obsessed about the beard. I was more obsessed about the hair because we saw Klingons with hair, and people have been clamoring for this since the very first reveal of Klingons. And I remember that Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick said, just wait, just trust us. We know what we're doing. This is a long burn here. And now we see a different side of Klingons. And I read it somewhere that someone at the panel that they held at NYCC, which was a massive Discovery panel and had everyone who's on the show was part of the panel. And I believe someone indicated that there was a sense that the Klingons have decided that in a time of war, they shave their hair, and in a time of peace, they grow it back, or something along these lines. And this was inspired by an episode from TNG. Did you read that in the transcript of the, or in the articles about this, panel?
I did. I also think it's very real world reminiscent. In Hindu culture, we have, or not in Hindu culture, in India, we have a subculture called Sikhism where people grow their hair all their life. That's the reason why they wear turbans. And I'm sure people know who I'm talking about. But there is it did seem very real world reminiscent to me. Maybe my perspective was unique, I guess, in that. But it makes sense to me. I think it might concern me if they're trying to match up the mythologies, because pretty much every time we see Klingons in all the other shows, there is war and they all have their hair. So I don't know where and when things change, but I'm sure they'll explain it to a point where I'll go, you know what, that makes sense. My favorite reveal in this, which I didn't know was actually happening until you showed me a video about it, but it was that Georgiou is now in Section 31. I'm sure everybody knew this but me, but there is also a bonus video that he pointed me to. It's on the official Star Trek YouTube channel where after the events of Season 1, Georgiou is recruited into Section 31. But in this, we see her wearing a holographic hood and she goes from Klingon to Mirror Giorgio, which was pretty badass.
Yeah, and we're going to see scenes with her. I mean, I think everyone knew that she was not going away from this franchise, but she wasn't going to be a, you know, permanent main character in it. But seeing her with scenes with Pike, you know, that's the first look of that. And so we kind of get a bit of a sense of how she's returning as an agent of Section 31. Yep, that was new, which was all very exciting. What was interesting was that the tone of this trailer was not as humorous, I think, as the first one. The teaser trailer really tried to play up the humor and side of it, whereas I think this one was a little bit more action-oriented. Did you get that sense?
Oh, absolutely. This is dark is the wrong word. It's much more serious, much more somber. And, of course, that line from one of the previous trailers, Spock's in trouble and he needs us, comes back in some form and fashion, and just a lot more, especially with the reveal of that Red Angel, a lot more trouble seems to be brewing.
Yeah, and that Red Angel freaks me out a little bit. Ever since, I'm not sure what the episode name is because I'm not a massive Doctor Who fan, but I have seen an episode of Doctor Who with this weeping angel, and my goodness, it's one of the most frightening things. A great episode of Doctor Who. And so I'm not a big fan of angels anymore after seeing that. It might be called Blink or something like that, and it's sensational piece of science fiction. And so now angels are off limits for me. And so seeing a freaky red angel gives in the trailer, it seems to me like the Discovery writers are a little bit more on steady ground with kind of exploration, slightly quasi-religious, you know, with the kind of Vulcan mythology and religious aspect to things. I think I wonder whether the writers are more happy with this kind of content than they were with the war footing that they were kind of handed with Brian Fuller in season one. So I'm kind of a little bit more optimistic about where this season is headed. All of that mystical aspect to Star Trek, which is which is completely, for a secular show, there's a lot of mysticism within Star Trek at different places and at different times and in different series. Obviously, DS9 had a lot of religious backing through the Bajorans and the prophets, but every show has had its own take on the different mythologies of different cultures. And you know that bit about the hair and the Klingons? So I went, okay, because there was a reference to the fact that this was inspired by the TNG episode, Rightful Heir. That's Heir, H-E-I-R, not H-A-I-R. Although it would have been appropriate if that's where they got the inspiration from. So at any rate, I delved into the transcripts because actually John Krikorian, the Trek Profiles host on the wonderful Tricorder Transmissions Network, posted a link to somewhere where you can actually search and look at all of the Trek transcripts. So I kind of said, oh, okay, show me in Rightful Heir where they're talking about hair. And look, it's not very explicit, but there's a quote here. I'm going to read it if it's all right with you, from Kales. He says, I went into the mountains all the way to the volcano at Kristak. There I cut off a lock of my hair and I thrust it into the river of molten rock which poured from the summit. The hair began to burn. Then I plunged into the lake of Lusor and twisted it into this sword. And after I used it to kill the tyrant Molor, I gave it a name, Batleth, the Sword of Honor. So nowhere does it actually say that you cut off your hair and, you know, in a time of peace and grow it in a time of war or vice versa. But there is some kind of mythological backdrop, I think, that maybe the Discovery writers are aware of that might play into Discovery Season 2. So I'm excited wherever – I do think and I know that the writers there are very respectful of Star Trek canon, even as they are pilloried from the left to the right of the internet for the exact opposite. So maybe they've found something here in Rightful Heir that they thought they could develop as a piece for the Discovery Klingons. What do you think about that?
I do think the mythology aspect is going to be difficult to balance from the outset because they're already doing kind of a Red Angel thing story, which almost borders on mythology, at least from what we're seeing now, to then going into mythology to the Klingons and their story. And it looks like we also see a Klingon battlecruiser, in at least as a hologram. So they're definitely going to delve deep into the Klingon mythology too. I don't know if it might be too much mythology. That's not a complaint. I'm a mythology guy. I enjoy it. So it looks like it's a balancing act. And I like how the trailer balances that mythology with all kinds of weird science that Stamets and Tilly and Burnham are getting into at some point in the trailer. So I don't know what it is, but Stamets just pulls something out of Tilly and he throws it out.
Yeah.
Tilly and Burnham are saying this is theoretically impossible at some point, and they're nodding and agreeing with each other. So as weird as the mythology might be, it looks like the science might be even crazier and weirder and larger than life, which again goes back to that trailer reveal. That's the power of math, people. So it looks like it's going to be full-on science, full-on mythology, and just a lot of emotional beats also. We'll talk about that. But what did you think about the science beats on this, Jamie?
We Trekkies better get our Treknababble in as well. You know, it's one thing to have great plot, great characters, you know, something to think about from a sociological, you know, mythological, religious point of view. But we better get our Treknababble in. And, of course, the mycelial network was all based on real science, as they took pains at telling us over the course of last year. So maybe there'll be some new real, you know, ripped from the pages of science tech that they can weave into Discovery Season 2. I'm all for all of that. And it did occur to me that you talked about the poster design. With all of this, you know, mythological and stuff in the background, do you not think that the poster design looks a little bit like the logo for Polytrex? you know, the place to go if you want to further dive into mythology and religion and political, you know, sociological issues and politics. You know, your one-stop shop for thinking more deeply about Star Trek. I think that the poster designer has been listening to your show and subconsciously or consciously just designed the poster that way, surely.
Well, Jamie, you're very kind. This certifies that we really need to get that check from CBS, so we don't go ahead and sue them. So, yeah, CBS, pony up that money. But thank you for saying that. Yeah, no,
that's plagiarism. And I need to say that CBS, I will do a deal with them. I will agree that we will not prosecute them for plagiarizing the Polytrex logo if they promise not to ask me how in Australia I managed to see Runaway, the Short Treks episode that just dropped, because of course it is not available for viewing internationally beyond the United States and Canada. And so who knows how I got to see it, but I managed to see it some way. So CBS, do me a deal. We won't come after you if you don't come after me. How does that sound? Do you think they'll take it, Shoshana?
They would be stupid not to, because it looks like we have the winning gamble with Polytrex's logo. But let me talk to you about a couple more things in this trailer before we move on. I also found a lot of the emotional beats kind of surprising. Like, I don't know what's going on with Saru and Burnham, but the fact that Burnham holds Saru and says, "You are my family," that's such a, it's of course a great big arc from where we saw them at the beginning of season one. And just, it looks like all around the crew seems to be in a lot more danger that they keep ending up in. Did you get that feeling at all?
Yeah. And they said that there would be a very brother sister relationship. I think that was one of the comments made on the panel, that there was a very an extended brother sister relationship. I remember that being said last season, but it was all a little too much. It was said but not shown, I kind of felt, as far as the relationship between Saru and Burnham went. Oh, this is a very brother sister relationship, they kind of said, and it was, I would like to see that developed, and it looks like they're going to do that more in this season.
One more thing, which was kind of a teaser that Alex Kurtzman left in one of the articles, I forget which one, the name escapes me, but he said we might also see more TOS characters in season two. apart from the ones we've seen so far, like Pike and Number One and Spock, what do you think he's referring to there?
Clearly, he's referring to Abraham Lincoln from The Savage Curtain, who will make an appearance in the stovepipe hat. No, I have no idea, but I'm excited to find out. Well, maybe it would be... Actually, I think I also saw reference to the fact that the Talosians, is it the Talosians, the people who were in
that's
the cage?
Right.
Those guys might make an appearance, so maybe that's what he's referring to. I mean, now we're dealing with Pike and we're dealing with Number One. If they're going to mine this particular area of Star Trek lore, then it does make sense that they would use some additional characters from around about that time, and that would probably include the Talosians. So maybe that's what Alex Kurtzman was referring to when he was suggesting we will see more from the original series.
That's a great blend, and that does lead us right into the big reveal that was Spock. And I know we talked about it a little bit, but I know there's also going to be a whole lot of backlash. The unkempt Spock does seem to be in line with his time in Vulcan in Star Trek III. So I don't know why anybody would make a big deal about his hair or beard. It kind of almost makes sense, given that the way things are going, he might be somewhere where he need to concentrate. What I am very much interested in is why he's on a gurney when we see him in the trailer. Why is he unconscious, and why does he need to be woken up, and what's the voice he's hearing? It's just so much mystery. But what, do you have any theories at this point, or are you just going to wait and see?
Only that it could be a tribute to the gurney scene in Star Trek IV. I'm hoping that there will be a slight... You know, there'll be some kind of tone change in the middle of one episode, and there'll be a chase down the hallways of the Discovery as Spock gets wheeled on a gurney. No, I have really no idea.
Somebody should stop and say, what is this, the Dark Ages?
Yes, exactly right. Leeches or something. Anyway, I think that'd be good. So, yeah, I don't know. Why is Spock on a gurney? Is he being operated on? Are they inserting or removing his brain? I don't know, but one thing's for sure, I do have a certain degree of trust in these writers that they would not have brought Spock into the series without a good reason. I think that's something that I do believe. You can criticize the decision to do that. Do we really need to revisit characters that we already know in a new series? But I do think that the people behind this show have enough love for the character and enough understanding of what they're doing to say that this won't just be a completely gratuitous use of the character for publicity's sake or something else. It has to be something built into the narrative and into the storyline as an integral part to justify its use. I'm hoping that that's the case, and I believe it will be the case, but that remains to be seen.
All around, just great stuff, right? I don't think I've seen anything that makes me sad. Just in case we didn't cover it, Rebecca Romijn as Number One looks amazing. I'm particularly excited to see her. But before we get out of here, Jamie, I know you got to see your sense Runaway. I got to see Runaway without getting into too many spoilers. Can you give us a review of what you thought, and any interesting takeaways that people should be aware of when they see it eventually or rewatch it?
Now, I'm not sure whether the Tricorder Transmissions intends for Disco Trek to do an episode on Runaway, so we better not give away too much in case they decide to do that. And in case my name gets picked out by the random generator on the Facebook page to be part of the show. But the first thing to say is I'm delighted that they are monkeying with the various formats of Trek. So the idea of a 15-minute, you know, short piece is really attractive to me as a way of providing more Trek and allowing the writers of Discovery to do more and different things with the franchise. So I actually thought that the format worked really well. Beyond that, it made me excited for the next three because I liked the idea of this bite-sized chunk of story that allowed for a kind of, look, it wasn't the world's most deadly important and groundbreakingly moving experience, but it was a cute character story. And obviously Tilly's the first person that comes to mind if you want to make a cute character-based story about one of the Discovery crew. And look, there was an underlying message about her trust in her own capacity to get through this command to training program. And I thought it was quite a nice little character piece. So, you know, full marks for me. It's not a full episode. It's just a little idea that must have been kicking around the writer's room. And so I just think it's like a you can't lose benefit to the franchise for having these little extra moments. And I thank the people who were behind it for making it happen, because it very easily could have been an idea that they scrunched up in a ball and threw in a waste paper basket going, there's no there in terms of a long full story that's part of a massive season arc. But now we can get these smaller stories. So I'm excited to see the next three. And I thought this was a great little character piece for Tilly. I'm curious to know what you thought about the presentation. Like it seemed to be shot totally as if it was just an episode of the series. Obviously the entire senior crew were on shore leave somewhere, but other than that, there was a bit of a weird opening where there were these clearly CGI people walking around the shuttle bay. And I was kind of like, oh, is this animated? And then it was quickly not. And anyway, but other than that, I thought it was great. What was your take?
Well, I really would like to speak to the nature of the short treks before I get into this one. CBS does not have to do this. They could ride the coattails of season one, and given the massive success of that, they could have just taken us into January. And given that they held so many things close to the chest until January with NYCC and STLV and the Picard show coming in, nobody had to do this. They certainly were not expected in any way to give us more. But the fact that they went out of their way to give us these short treks and give us continuing treks so we would stay connected, we would get more story, we'd get more content, is very commendable. Granted, I'm sure there is the money aspect to it, but the fact that they can make original, interesting stories that will keep us hooked, even if we're 15 or 20 or 30 minutes, makes really good market sense. It makes a lot of sense as a fan when I watch it. I can sit down and go, you know what? I don't have an hour today to sit down and watch Measure of Man, but I do have 20 minutes to sit down and watch Tilly or go on this little adventure, so I'm going to sit down and watch it. Now, coming to the actual short trek, I enjoyed it. I did not have any real complaints about it. It was very harmless. I guess that's the word I'll go with today. It was harmless. It was a nice side story, something more that we learned about one of the characters. I'm doing my best not to reveal spoilers, but just Mary Wiseman is just her acting talent is shown up here again. I like that with the short track, you get to see a bit of a different side of the Tilly. You always see the bubbly, crazy side, and this shows a little bit of a Tilly on edge side. You get to see an interesting layer to her, so that was fun for me, and I bet that was one of the reasons why this short tricks came through. But all around, good job, guys. Keep going. I'm excited about the other three. I'm also excited for season two of Discovery. I'm excited for Picard show. I have no more excitement left, but those comic books are coming, man.
You're all excited, yeah, out.
I am excited out.
Fair enough. And I think that brings us to the end of another action-packed week of news on Weekly Trek.
Is that right? Correct. For Weekly Trek, I am Shashank Avaru. You can find me on @gutter_hero on Twitter. You can find this show on @weeklytrek on Twitter. Please consider supporting us on Patreon. We are patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. Jamie, where can people get in touch with you to discuss all your crazy theories that you threw out today?
Yeah, Shashank, I'm on Twitter @jmac_ref, JMAC_REF, and I'm always happy to talk to Trek fans about what is going on in the Trek universe. Thank you very much for being on the show with me and chatting about all things Trek this week, and thanks to all of our listeners for listening in, and we'll look forward to another episode of Weekly Trek next week. So until then, from me, it is goodbye.
And onward to Star Sighting.